Good morning, this is Linda, and I'll be reading the News Gazette for the day Thursday, March 16th, 2017. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Triple I Aid Proposal Spelled Out, Guarantee of State Funding Sought to Dispel Uncertainty. The University of Illinois is pledging to serve 85% of its student financial aid for Illinois residents if legislators support a proposed five-year state funding agreement with the UI. President Tim Kaline killed the new Triple I measure for Invest in Illinois as a financial aid program to stem a migration of talented Illinois high school seniors to out-of-state colleges. At Wednesday's Board of Trustees meeting, Kaline said the UI would commit a minimum of $170 million a year for the next 5 years to students who are from Illinois if the state approves the proposed investment, performance, and accountability commitment. The five-year compact would give the UI predictable funding in exchange for meeting certain benchmarks. But after the meeting, Kaline clarified that the $170 million isn't really new money, but the amount the U of I already gives to students from Illinois. It represents about 85% of the $200 million in financial aid provided by the university, which comes from a variety of sources, including scholarships, fundraising, and state support, said Executive Vice President Barbara Wilson. The U of I would use that $170 million as a base moving forward and reserve 85% of any growth in financial aid resources for Illinois students, officials said. It's an all-time high. We want to be able to sustain that and grow it, and it really depends on the IPAC, Wilson said, adding that financial aid will be a big component of the U of I's upcoming fundraising campaign. But if the five-year state funding compact isn't approved or state funding declines, financial aid may go down because of financial pressure on the university, Kaline said. We are not going to be able to deliver on all of our promises in our side of the compact, he said, including a promise to keep tuition and fee increases to no more than the rate of inflation. Under the five-year compact, the U of I's base funding would be $647 million, the amount it received in fiscal 2015, the last year of a full state budget. Its funding would rise by the rate of inflation after that. We want to lay out what we can do for taxpayers and families of Illinois, Kaline said, but it's contingent upon the state holding up its end of the bargain. Kaline said the financial aid plan would provide $850 million to in-state students over 5 years, a level unprecedented in our 150-year history. The U of I admits more than 70% of Illinois residents who apply to its three campuses, Kaline said. More than 80% of the U of I's systems students are from Illinois, including 90% at the Chicago campus and 73% in Urbana. But Kaline said the U of I loses many students because of cost, with most who choose out-of-state colleges over Illinois, citing the lack of financial support as a factor. Illinois is now second only to New Jersey in terms of the net loss of high school seniors to out-of-state colleges, officials said. That number rose from 29% in 2002 to 45% in 2015. The out-migration is costing Illinois talent, earning power, and a host of other benefits, Kaline said. The financial aid would be a mix of merit and need-based grants, officials said. Wilson said financial aid packages are determined by the individual colleges where students are accepted, and they look at a variety of factors. These days, I would say need and merit are overlapping to a great extent, Wilson said. Many, many families need help supporting their children to go to school. We don't separate it out. That's the end of this article. The next article is titled, Protesters Demand Improved Black Recruitment. A dozen protesters advocating for improved recruitment of African American students briefly interrupted Wednesday's University of Illinois Board of Trustees meeting. As President Tim Killeen began his remarks, the students rose from the audience and started a series of chants, including, quote, "Admit more black students, retain more black students," end quote. They stood in a circle around the board table and unfurled a banner reading, quote, "Project 1000," end quote, and shouting, quote, "Stop the cuts, fund black futures," end quotes. The students handed out cards describing Project 1000 as a black student-led campaign to increase recruitment and retention of black students at the Urbana campus. It said black students make up 17.3% of students in Illinois public schools, but just 5.16% of the Urbana student body in the fall of 2016. The group also calls for more financial aid and academic support for black students. Later, during the meeting's public comment session, U of I freshman Kendall Brooks told trustees that investing in black students will pay off as successful alumni send their kids to the U of I and donate to scholarships and other needs. Quote, "One day I would want my kids to go to this university and give back funds," end quote, he said. Chancellor Robert Jones said later that the group had requested a meeting with him and he's hoping to schedule one soon. During his first week on the job, Jones attended a symposium on the issue with alumni of Project 500, a 1968 U of I initiative to bring 500 black and Hispanic students to the U of I. This is an issue that we care greatly about, and this institution has been working on it for quite some time, Jones said. U of I data shows that the campus admitted 548 black freshmen this year, about 7.2% of the total. But another 646 checked boxes indicating they were African American, as well as Hispanic or other races, officials said. Next title is Sexual Assault Concerns. A parent also addressed the board Thursday, urging the university to release information about where campus sexual assaults take place. The U of I has sent several notices to parents in recent weeks advising them about sexual assaults, but not providing the location or the name of the fraternity, if one was involved. Brent Barron said that permits an aura of protection to exist for the unnamed fraternity while doing nothing to warn others of the dangers that occur there. The emails urge parents to remind their children that alcohol or drugs could impair judgment and that they shouldn't put themselves in that situation. "The one thing that I did not receive was the name of the fraternity involved. I ask you, as a parent, how can I intercede in what my child does when I have no idea where the incident occurred? All I can say is, stay away from fraternity parties." Barron said he understands the university has to protect the rights of those involved and investigate to see whether the perpetrator should be prosecuted or disciplined. His concern is how the university deals with the fraternities themselves. "Naming them would put fraternities on notice that sexual assault won't be tolerated," he said. He also urged the U of I to revoke a fraternity's charter for repeated incidents. After the meeting, Jones said he understands the concern, but said the U of I doesn't want to release any information that would identify the victim, particularly if the assault happened during a social event. "It's a small world. It won't take a lot to be able to deduce who the particular perpetrators and who the victims might be," he said. "It's a slippery slope." The campus focuses on prevention by educating all students about sexual assault, he said. The next paragraph is titled Unofficial Update. Also Wednesday, Jones reiterated his determination to end unofficial St. Patrick's Day drinking holiday, which resulted in the death of a U of I junior last month. He said the entire community owes the student's family a promise to work tirelessly to put an end to this senseless ritual that adds little to the educational experience we are here to provide. Police do an excellent job, he said, but they can't be everywhere at once. Jones said is still trying to discover... I'm sorry, that doesn't make sense. Let me start this paragraph over. Jones said he is still trying to schedule a meeting with the city's mayors and other relevant parties as he's been traveling. He is not sure exactly what can be done about an event that draws so many out-of-towners, but that's one of the things he wants to discuss. Next paragraph is titled, In Other Action. The board also approved several administrative appointments, mid-year raises for 12,000-plus employees, and a 24% increase in student health insurance rates stemming from a big jump in student claims. U of I officials said they decided to renew the contract with United Healthcare despite the premium increase because of the uncertainty in the health insurance market, but they may rebid it next year. That is the end of that article. The next article is Company Acquiring Mid-Illinois. Busey is buying yet another bank, this time in Peoria. First Busey Corp., the holding company for Busey Bank, plans to buy Mid-Illinois Bancor, Incorporated, the holding company for Southside Trust and Savings Bank of Peoria, for a mix of cash and stock valued at about $133.4 million. This is an organization that we've really admired and thought very highly of for many years. We've known that group and that team for many years and always felt it would be a nice business combination if it ever presented itself, First Busey President and CEO Van Dukeman said. We're fortunate that it did. The announcement comes a month after Busey announced it is expanding to Chicago's southwest suburbs with the $235.8 million purchase of First Community Financial Partners, and a year after Busey expanded into St. Louis with the $210.7 million purchase of Pulaski Financial. The deal is expected to close in the second half of this year, with Southside Bank completing its merger into Busey in early 2018. While Busey's previous two purchases have helped it expand into new markets, this purchase helps strengthen its position in an existing market. Busey has been in Peoria since the mid-1990s, Dukeman said, and with the addition of Southside Bank's 13 branches to its current 5, Busey will jump from number 8 in Peoria County deposit market share to number 2. Southside Bank, which was founded in 1922, has more than $665 million in bank assets and $575 million in trust assets. Dukeman said the purchase should help customers of both banks. Busey customers will end up with more locations in the Peoria area, he said. It's also good for Southside Bank customers. We'll be able to offer more services on both the trust side and the banking side. Southside Bank customers will also have access to more locations and a higher lending limit, Dukeman said. It's a net positive for both sets of customers, he said. After two purchases announced in 2 months, Dukeman said he doesn't expect more anytime soon, as Busey works on integrating First Community and Southside Banks. I would expect we're on the sidelines for a while. The next article is titled, Automatic Voter Registration Advanced Again. Illinois would implement automatic voter registration in time for the 2018 general election under a bill approved by the Senate Executive Committee on Wednesday. Similar legislation passed the Senate and House last year but was vetoed by Governor Bruce Rauner. Under the measure, Illinois residents who interact at security of state driver's license stations or at several other state agency offices would be automatically registered to vote unless they opted out. A new version of the legislation, SB 1933, was approved by the Senate Committee 10-3 along party lines. There are two significant differences following the governor's veto last year, said Senator Andy Maynard, Democrat from Bunker Hill, the sponsor of the measure. The first is the implementation date, July 1, 2018. The second is that customers at affected agencies could opt out of registering to vote immediately. Debbie Liu of Chicago-based Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community, said the legislation would make democracy more accessible to this community and many other minority communities. A spokesman for Secretary of State Jesse White said his office would hope to implement automatic voter registration when it implements a Real ID program, also next year. The federal Real ID Act of 2005 required states to have consistent identification programs to prove residency. We think the best way to do this is if we could tie it to when we implement Real ID, Nathan Maddox said. In early 2018, we will begin issuing Real ID compliant driver's licenses and ID cards. To qualify for one of those, you must give us proof whether you are here as an immigrant or as a citizen. At the latest, Maddox said, the office would be ready to implement Real ID on June 2018. Earlier Wednesday, at a press conference with supporters of the legislation, State Representative Mike Fortner, Republican from West Chicago, said that automatic voter registration would reduce voter fraud. I think we can give more assurance to the voters, however they feel about the issue of voter fraud, that this data set that is going to allow us to make a more secure check that people are qualified and should be registered to vote, said Fortner, who has sponsored a similar bill in the House. Seven states and the District of Columbia have implemented automatic voter registration in the last 2 years. Next paragraph in the same article is titled In Other Action. The Executive Committee also approved voting along party lines, a bill that would not allow any candidate for president or vice president to appear on the ballot in Illinois until he or she has released at least 5 years of federal tax returns. Asked about the constitutionality of his proposal, Senator Daniel Biss, Democrat from Skokie, said, quote, "We can't put additional requirements on who may run for federal office. The classic example is we can't say you have to live in a congressional district to run for Congress," end quote. This bill doesn't say who's allowed to run. It says that if you're a person who meets the U.S. constitutional requirements of being 35 years old and being a natural-born citizen, then you have to do a very reasonable and doable thing to achieve ballot access, just like filing petitions, Bliss said. I don't think we could say, for instance, that you can't run for president if your tax return shows you're a billionaire who hasn't paid taxes. The next article is titled, On Her Menu, Helping Others. Piatto Cafe co-owner to be honored for charitable work. When Kelly Jo Lamb spotted kids' gloves and hats at a big box store for 50 cents each, she bought 80 of them. She got them stashed away for children who are going to need them next winter, and at such a low price, she'll probably go buy some more. Also a provider of monthly meal for Daily Bread Soup Kitchen and backpacks and school supplies for hundreds of kids at Urbana's Martin Luther King Jr. Elementary School, the 42-year-old Lamb is a longtime community giver who's now glad she changed career tracks. She'd originally gone to college to become a social worker and ended up a business owner. I'm more in a position to help this way, she said. The co-owner of Piatto Cafe, Lamb, will be honored tonight with the Leader Award for Business at the YWCA's Women Achievement Celebration. The 11-year-old cafe at Lincoln Square is part of a family of food businesses Lamb operates with her husband Francisco Andreas, the Guatemalan native she met in her early days of operating Piatto Cafe. He'd come in regularly to order a piece of quiche and coffee and to flirt with her, she said. They got married on a Sunday and had to turn down 5 catering jobs for that day, Lamb recalled. Next paragraph is titled, I'm Just Cooking. She and Andreas are the parents of an 8-year-old son, and Piatto has expanded to include a catering business, a seasonal food truck, and a subscription meal delivery service called Organic Food Nanny. A woman accustomed to putting in 50 to 80 hour work weeks, Lam is a Bemidji native who's been working hard since her teenage years. In her teens, she babysat after school and full-time during the summers. She went to Parkland College for an associate's degree in social work and then went to the University of Illinois for a year, working nights during her school years at Lincolnshire Fields Country Club. After that, she worked a series of jobs in cooking and baking at Elliott's Meats, Sweet Indulgence Bakery, Sigma Alpha Epsilon Fraternity House, City of New Orleans Restaurant, and the Urbana Country Club, at one time juggling three food jobs. Her parents had divorced when she was 15, and her mother, a multiple transplant patient, needed the financial help, she said. Lam later went to culinary school at Le Cordon Bleu in Orlando, Florida. But don't call her a chef. She doesn't think of herself that way. "I'm just doing my thing," she said. "I'm just cooking." What that means to her is doing good food, and food with nice presentation, too, she said. That's also important. The course of becoming a business owner didn't start smoothly for Lam. She had a business partner for her first 6 months who said, she said, left owing her money. She dug in, didn't pay herself for a year and a half, and slept on a friend's couch. "I paid my student loan, and that was it," she said. The next paragraph is titled "A Selfless Person." Future plans for the business include a relocation. Lam said Piatto will leave Lincoln Square after the lease is up next year. She bought a property on the 800 block of East Main Street in 2015 and said it will become the new home for the catering kitchen. She hopes to buy another lot to make it a permanent spot for the food truck. "There's so much more that we're planning to do," she said, seated at a table at the cafe. "We just can't do it here." While she works long hours, Lam said she loves the people contact of the job and knowing Piatto is where her customers have chosen to come to eat. "The restaurant business is either in your blood or it's not, and apparently it's in my blood," she said. She's not rich and doesn't want to be, but giving to others is important to her, the business and her family, Lam said. Instead of gifts for himself, her son asked for shoes for relatives in Guatemala for his last year's birthday, and donations of cat and dog food for the Champaign County Humane Society for this year's birthday, she said. For several years, Piatto ran regular $5 buffets as fundraisers for charities, and she chose Martin Luther King Jr. School for the Backpack Project because it has so many students in need of help. By making arrangements with Walmart and Walgreens, a backpack full of school supplies for each child costs just $10, she said. Lam's longtime friends describe her as a tireless worker and someone always willing to help. Mark Pettijohn of Chicago, who's known Lam since their teen years, remembers her driving her mother back and forth to medical treatments in Chicago. "She's an awesome person," he said. Another longtime friend, Rusty Straub of Mahomet, recalled Lam starting the school backpack program on her own. "She's just a selfless person that will do about anything for anyone, and she's always looking out for others, for other people," she said. And that is the end of that story. Next, I'm going to read a little about around the area. CU March for Peace scheduled, Champaign. A Champaign-Urbana March for Peace will be held at 1 p.m. on March 25th, organized by the Champaign-Urbana Area Project. The march will be centered around ending gun violence. Participants will meet at Hazel Park at the corner of Neal Street and Bradley Avenue. In Mansfield, the village board voted 4-2 to hire Justin Ernst, E-R-N-S-T, as a part-time patrol officer for no more than 15 hours a week. Todd Jones said he voted no because he felt the village should further investigate the possibility of the Piatt County Sheriff's Department providing police coverage. In Rantoul, a meet and greet with the candidates running for mayor and village board will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday at the Rantoul American Legion, Post 287 at 1132 North Century Boulevard. And in Thomasboro, the village board passed an ordinance that changes the fee structure for building permits. Now, instead of all building permits being $10, they'll cost $200 for a new house, $250 for a new commercial building, $50 for a house addition, and $75 for a commercial addition, $25 for a fence or deck. And in Monticello, Monticello Theater Association, play auditions set for this weekend. The Monticello Theater Association will have auditions Saturday and Sunday for its next production, Dial M for Murder by Frederick Knott. The auditions will be from 2 to 5 p.m. both days at the Phoenix Theater for 1406 North Market Street. The play calls for a woman, age 25 to 35, three men, age 25 to 40, one man or woman older than 30, and two other men or women. In Dial M for Murder, a has-been tennis player has married his wife for her money and now plans to murder her for the same reason. He arranges the perfect murder, but things do not go as planned. The play will be performed May 6th, 7th, and 12th through 14th with Leonard Rumery directing. And Leonard's last name is spelled R-U-M-E-R-Y. Visit Champaign County. Tourism leaders can be nominated. Visit Champaign County will honor local tourism ambassadors of the greater Champaign County area at its annual Toast of Tourism on May 10th as part of National Travel and Tourism Week, May 7th through the 13th. The organization seeks nominations for the 2017 Tourism Impact Awards for individuals who have greatly contributed to travel and tourism in the greater Champaign County area, including Monticello and Arthur. Nominations are being accepted through April 10th on Visit Champaign County's website. Submissions must include an example of how this person has gone above and beyond for the county's tourism industry. And that concludes that section. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated March 16th, 2017. Please stay tuned.